Hello and welcome to the first 2019-20 in-season edition of the B-Ball Index podcast, brought to you this week by Axios. My name is Jacob Goldstein. I am joined by my lovely co-host, Tim. Tim, how are you doing this week?
Well, Jacob, you may be able to notice my voice is a little bit gone. I spent so much time the first 4 minutes of the Laker game just yelling to everybody that would listen that the league made a mistake and they shouldn't have let us get AD and we were never going to lose. That didn't work out, so I'm still recovering.
81-1 is still on the table. Do not give up hope. Also joining us this week is one of our fantastic writers, Eric Griffith. He mostly covers the Trailblazers, but all of our writers this season are going to be hitting on a wide range of teams, trying to cover bigger storylines. Eric, how are you?
Well, the Blazers game, it just barely started, so I still have my voice for now. So it's a good time to do a podcast.
Perfect. We're really just trying to ease you into the season by distracting you during the game.
Yeah, you got me. I might need it. We'll see how it goes.
Absolutely. Coming out probably around the same time as this podcast or soon after is an article Eric wrote for us about some recent contract extensions for some of the top players in, rookie contract extensions. So they're going to what, their fourth year or fifth year at this point?
Yeah, they're going into their fourth year. And so the deadline to sign an extension rather than becoming restricted free agents on July 1st was this last Monday. And several players reached agreements with their incumbent teams to avoid that free agency process in 9 months.
Yeah, it was actually a surprisingly high number of players. It seems potentially because of the China debacle that's been going on. Players might be a little bit more wary about the salary, the CBA salary cap going down and maybe trying to lock in money now while they still can. But what you did in your article, which I thought was really interesting, was you looked at using PIPM and just additional contextual factors you have from watching basketball. You were looking at these contracts and trying to project if these players were going to be worth it or not, if it was a risky contract or not. And, you know, you hit on a whole host of players in the article, but I think the most interesting for us to talk about today would be Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, just because he kind of falls into this space where he's maybe worth it, he's maybe not. There's a lot of kind of swing skills involved in there that can make this either a really good deal or kind of a crappy one that sits on their books for a long time. Do you want to dig into that a little bit?
Yeah, so I think Jaylen Brown's a particularly interesting case because for his first, you know, his second season in the league, he looked like a potential all-star in the making. He was really making headway with that unexpected Celtics Western Conference Finals run. And then he didn't really follow a consistent trajectory. I think a lot of Celtics fans would agree that he was a little disappointing last year. He almost stagnated or maybe even got a little bit worse in Boston, mm-hmm. which is not what you want to see from he's like 21, 22-year-old. Third-year player. And so I think that makes his negotiation a little more complicated than someone like Pascal Siakam, who's showing just a very obvious upward trend for his first couple of years in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, especially given the way his three-point percentage fluctuated so much between his first, second, and third years in the league, going from, you know, a bit below average to suddenly really good to a bit below average again, and coupling that with the fact that his free throw percent, which generally speaking is a really strong indicator of someone's pure shooting ability, his free throw percent has always been in the mid-60s, so he's not an especially strong player from that location. Just leaves a lot of variables in the air as to kind of what he's actually good at, even though we now are into his fourth season. There's just still a lot of questions, I think, as to if he can shoot, if he can defend, can he create at all? Like, where is he really going and taking his game from here?
Yeah, and so his defensive PIPM actually is expected to take a pretty big jump this year. The model has him jumping from a 0.08 to a plus 0.67. And I think that's where the Celtics are really projecting him. He was still a positive defender, at least with the eye test as well, last season. And so it's really a question of whether or not he can develop any kind of really reliable go-to offensive game. And if he can do that, then I think the Celtics are pretty optimistic that he's, if not a two-way player, a one-and-a-half-way player, which should be more than sufficient given the other firepower they have with Kemba Walker and their other players to be an effective starter on that roster.
For sure. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, the model for those of you listeners who don't know, we've explained it a couple times before, but the model Eric's referring to is my PAPM player projection tool. It's a part of the data and tools package we offer for $5 a month. And it just is, it takes each player in the league and projects their career going forward until either they retire or reach some minimum threshold where the model decides that they're probably not going to get another contract after this point. In the case of Brown, yeah, he had that dip this past season, but he still has a positive multi-year projection because of how good he was in his second year in the league, projecting to peak around plus 0.5 for a couple seasons, put in some not quite sub-all-star, but strong starter seasons. And I think if the Celtics can really hone in on that production and just help him focus on what he's good at, which is being a strong 3-and-D player, not really doing a ton of individual creation, and putting his athleticism to good use, then that can really be a tool going forward to having him be a key part of a potential championship contender roster.
Yeah, and what's a little bit problematic from my perspective is that up until now, he was a very tradable asset for the Celtics. You know, he's on that 4-year rookie contract. Those guys are like gold, because they're, you have to almost try not to overplay your value when you're on that rookie contract. But now the Celtics have given him, what was it, an extension that could be worth up to $115 million over 4 years. Mm-hmm. A maximum extension is roughly going to be $116 million. And some of that's in those incentives that he may or may not hit, things like winning Defensive Player of the Year, he probably won't hit. But he's still a player who's going to be starting a contract at $24 million a year next season. And that is not necessarily tradable anymore. So Danny Ainge has more or less married himself to Jaylen Brown's development. And if Jaylen Brown doesn't develop, the Celtics, I don't think, would be able to move him without attaching another asset. And so this is problematic, because they've gone from having a positive asset with huge trade value to having a guy who is at best a neutral asset right now, who is untradeable right now because of the way the math works out on a contract that explodes like that next mm-hmm. season, and who has to really show a lot this year to become tradable even on July 1st of the upcoming year.
Yeah, and that picture looks worse if the salary cap were to take a hit as a repercussion of the what's going on with China and the NBA. I guess looking a little positively, if we turn to some of Jaylen Brown's talent grades, he didn't have as strong a season last year as 2 years ago. And like we mentioned, the shooting dip was a big piece of that, but he still has a pretty solid, talented profile across the board. He has a number of Bs in different important categories. He had an A- as a perimeter defender, an A- as a one-on-one scorer, which he doesn't do a ton, but there's enough hope there. I think he's certainly not somebody who I would immediately say is, you know, that was a bad investment. I agree with you, Eric, that it would be difficult to trade him. And at best, at least in the short term, he might just be a neutral contract. But he has enough talent in enough different areas that he should be a good basketball player, contract aside. And if we look at the math that we did on the different offensive roles that players can fit within, it's really encouraging to see that pretty much every single wing role projects Brown to be in like the high 70s to low 80s range from an offensive overall value standpoint on our 50 to 99, 2K scale, 60 to 99, something like that. So he still looks like a strong player. He looks like someone who it'll be difficult to misuse, and I don't think they're going to throw him into just an insane amount of pick and roll or something like that, but any of the wing categories I think he'll perform strongly in, and he has the opportunity. You know, he's good at a lot. We have to figure out what he's great at, and he's in a position where if it's, you know, A becomes greater, B or C or D, he's good enough in the other areas that he'll fit into some sort of archetype as a basketball player.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying he's a bad player at all, because obviously he's a very good player. The Celtics, I'm guessing, have all-star aspirations for him. He doesn't necessarily need to hit that to be a good investment. But if you look at it right now, the PIPM projection is that over those 4 years of his contract, he right now projects to be worth $93 million. And they're throwing a near max at him, so pretty much 20% over what his current projection is. So if I could get, you know, if I could hook Danny Ainge up to a lie detector test and get his honest evaluation of what's going on, I would love an answer for why he extends Jaylen Brown right now instead of waiting until July 1st and just matching whatever contract Brown gets. You run the risk that someone's going to throw a maximum deal at him. I understand that, and that would jack his salary up from, I think, 23 and a half or something up to like 29. So you're running a risk there that that's going to happen. But right now, I don't see a team offering him that max deal, especially given what we've seen with teams over, or especially given the trepidation teams might have around that salary cap.
That's a good point. Just from a roster construction standpoint, or from the team building side, more so than just on the court, they're running a risk. I guess either way, there is risk involved. So I don't know, maybe they're using some math and trying to model out based on who the available players would be, what could he get based on which teams have cap room. We don't know that, we can speculate, but it'll be certainly interesting to see how it plays out. But at the worst, he's still a very valuable player, like you said. It just potentially could be an overpay, which is would be a shame, because we've seen several talented players in the league. If you get overpaid, it kind of changes the whole perception around you, and you can be very good, but you're always chasing that level, and it's tough to get there for certain guys.
And there's no indication, like there's been a lot written about how smart Jaylen Brown is and how seriously he takes his career in the NBA and how he's aware of social justice and whatnot. And there's no indication he's the type of player who is now going to check out and stop improving. So I would be almost shocked that wasn't part of their calculus, and they're really counting on that very stable and very predictable personality to come through, and he'll continue to improve despite having the contract. So they feel safer than maybe if they were going after someone like Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, he's a high character guy, great defender. So that, I mean, you immediately have a floor there with some still raw talent offensively, but he's developed that to a consistent level in several different facets. So we'll be looking forward to see what happens there. We won't give away the other guys that you touched on in your piece, but having looked through it already, I'm excited to let everybody see what you've got. I think it's some good stuff, and really pleased with the work we've had going on so far at the site. And on the same topic of players who have gotten those extensions, there was also a list of guys who – with the deadline was yesterday, I believe. The teams did not negotiate with them. Monday, yeah. So are there any, I guess either of you, are there any interesting players from that list who didn't get extended that maybe it's a smart call, not so smart of a call? Any thoughts there? I have one in mind, but I'll give you a chance.
I think it makes a ton of sense that Brandon Ingram, for example, didn't get extended. He's on a new team. They don't really know exactly what he is, and he was far from the centerpiece of that trade. So that makes a ton of sense to me. One that did kind of surprise me was that Jakob Poeltl didn't get extended after DeJounte Murray did, both with the Spurs. DeJounte Murray missed all of last year, and you know the Spurs feel like they got him on a really good deal where if he's healthy coming back from his ACL injury, you know, $64 million over 4 years is a fantastic contract. If he's not, obviously that's not going anywhere. But it's just kind of surprising to see that Jakob Poeltl, who is the starting center for the team and, you know, was the starting center all last year, ended up not getting anything at all. It's possible the Spurs were lowballing a little. I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, just a little surprising to see that they would extend one of their young players and probably the less proven of their young players compared to the guy who had been the starter for all of last year and isn't coming off a very serious injury.
I think the Nuggets were an interesting case because they had three solid to very good players who were eligible. They had Jamal Murray, who did sign a maximum extension a while ago. And then they had Juan Hernan Gomez and Malik Beasley, and they did not sign an extension with Hernan Gomez or Beasley. And you wonder what their strategy is there. I don't think it's bad to let those guys go to restricted free agency, but I almost wonder if that's a sign that they're trying to keep trade flexibility since they have so many pieces on that roster and they can't possibly pay all of those guys market value. So at some point they need to look into converting some of those into a single star player, or getting more future assets out of some of those guys who they can't retain.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, Eric. And I think both of them could be valuable trade pieces. And Beasley is someone I can understand why you maybe wouldn't want to invest a lot of money in long-term. Provides some value offensively, great shooter, good one-on-one scorer. He cuts very well, but isn't the full package, isn't quite the playmaker, and defensively is quite a liability. So knowing what we know about guards and combo guards and developing perimeter defense, if you come into the league without it, you're probably not going to make a big jump. So setting expectations correctly there may be difficult with a player who, you know, is certainly willing to improve, but just realistically, it may not be within the hands that they're dealt. So that's an interesting one. Maybe a shrewd move on their part not to sign the dotted line yet and see what his market value is and then decide to match or not. But just like you said, the trade piece route is also pretty interesting. And I mean, it'll be a good thing to speculate about, maybe a piece for later in the year, but seeing what they can cash in on and you know, pair Jokic with some more talent would be even more interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I think the Nuggets almost have one of the most interesting rosters in the NBA because there's a clear path for most teams. Like, you can kind of tell what their options are, but the Nuggets have so many of those guys who, as you just described, look like they're going to be solid role players, but maybe they're, you know, have not a fatal flaw, but a big flaw that's going to limit their upside. And so what do you do with all those guys? How do you convert them into a long-term asset if you can't afford to keep every single one of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to be smart. And I'll going back to Jacob's earlier point, Brandon Ingram was somebody that immediately came to mind for me. I think it was smart by the Pelicans not to throw a lot of money at him.
Absolutely.
I don't know what the expectation would have been. I don't know what he could have gotten, but he's somebody who, and I'm a big believer in Brandon Ingram, being a Laker fan, having him been with Lakers for a while. He is the best one-on-one grade in our database at a player that was his age last year. So he certainly has a lot of talent. He was in a situation where he was one of the least optimized players by our math over the past couple of years, coming from a really poor offensive system. So there's a lot that could be breaking in the right direction for him. But he's also somebody who has been – him and Andrew Wiggins are the two players in our math that have been used similarly in a way that's over their heads from a talent standpoint. They've both been used in that – you know, primary scorer. The Lakers were throwing, you know, at one point in the season, Brandon Ingram was like top 10 in pick and rolls, which is not where you want him. So he's somebody that if that style of play carries over this season, and the Pelicans know more about that than we do, but if he plays that way, but his talent isn't there, the place you can put yourself in, and we see this today with Andrew Wiggins, so I think he was shooting like 6 for 20 or something like that. If you invest the money in somebody like that, it's tough to scale back the role. So they're probably better off waiting, seeing what they have, and then maybe they end up paying him. My thinking is what they would pay him today versus what they may have to pay him isn't as different as it might be for some other players, but the risk is much higher for Ingram, depending on how he plays this season. So I think it's a smart move on their part to wait and see, because he profiles a lot in terms of style and skill set like Andrew Wiggins. So I'm hoping he doesn't turn out that way, but that would be the fear. That's the very clear example.
Andrew Wiggins, minus 26 in a loss or in a win today. 1 point win, minus 26, 21 points on 28 shooting possessions.
Ooh, that's impressive for an overtime game.
Yeah. Cat destroying everyone pretty much.
But what do you do with him? Our database says he's one of the least, in terms of the opportunity cost of him and his role versus the other roles, he's definitely not in the right role, but you're paying him so much money that your hands are almost tied at that point. Do you let somebody who's making that much money be a spot-up shooter or mid-volume?
He's not even good at that.
Yeah, you have to be really creative in – it's an interesting, not politics, not a political situation, but just the locker room in dealing with somebody like that who you've given him so much money, and he may take it very well, but egos are probably involved there as well.
Well, and you worry about that chemistry aspect when you overpay a guy like that. And that's why I see the Kings giving Harrison Barnes $80 million. And then you wonder if Buddy Hield being so adamant about getting a big dollar extension had to do with Harrison Barnes, because his agent has to be going in to the general manager's office and saying, you know, you gave this guy who is not as good as my client $80 million. How can you offer him less now?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for Buddy, it's even more imperative because of his age and the likely length of whatever contracts he would be getting in the market. He needs to lock down that money right now. He's played very well. He's in a place where he's kind of earned it. You want to capitalize now, so you don't need to get like a 1+1 and then try again in a couple of years as you're not really improving all that much anymore with his age.
Yeah, because he's what, 26? So he's going to be 30 when his next contract runs out. So this was kind of his last chance for big money almost.
Mm-hmm. And 26 is about when, I don't want to say players peak, but for a lot of the skill sets that we look at and even PIPM, 26 is about the time where you really plateau.
Yeah, that's when the trade-off between athleticism and IQ kind of switches and your athleticism starts waning while your IQ is still going up. So you're able to maintain your peak for a couple of years, but you're not going to really become that much better or worse of a player after that point, outside of like a few outlier examples that we've seen historically.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Hield was another guy I think we've mentioned previously, another one who was in a role that doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him. He's been used as a glue guy. He very clearly should be more of a movement wing, running off of screens, such a great shooter off of off-ball screens, pin-downs, flares. So hopefully they can figure that out this year and he can provide even more value. He's somebody I'm keeping an eye on. He's one of my favorite players.
There are countless ways to keep up on what's happening in the world of sports. But how are you supposed to read every great article? How are you supposed to watch every awesome highlight without losing time in your busy day? Scrolling through every app and visiting every website on a daily basis is just impossible. Now coming to the stage is Axios Sports. Axios Sports is a modern sports page delivered directly to your email inbox. Each morning, you'll see the best stories from around sports, from the NBA to the NFL, even niche sports like cricket and ping pong. The email newsletter highlights the most important stats and trends, giving you the ability to stay informed. And it's super simple to sign up. Just go to sports.axios.com. Axios Sports is clean, crisp, and gives you everything you need to know. Read it in 5 minutes in the elevator or discover a deep dive article while you're on the train to work. Not only will you be caught up, you'll be the coolest person sharing an amazing link with your friends and coworkers. Join the 100,000 sports fans who get caught up on the day before it even begins. And best of all, there's no paywall, no subscription fee, nothing. This is a free curated sports content platform delivered directly to you. So do yourself a favor and sign up. Sign up to Axios Sports newsletter for free at sports.axios.com. Seriously, it'll help you feel more informed without spending all that time clicking through websites, apps, and social media platforms. Again, try for free at sports.axios.com. Now let's talk about Indochino. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe. I know that I wear suits every day at work, and when you have a suit that fits well, you feel great. And with Indochino and how affordable they are, you can get almost all of their custom clothing for under $400. So instead of just going and buying one expensive suit, you can go buy, you know, two or three or four and fill out your wardrobe. And if you do decide to do that, start your style upgrade now with $30 off of your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. So go to Indochino.com, promo code Blue Wire for $30 off that total purchase of $399 or more. It's an incredible deal and allows you to get some great custom clothing made to measure just for you. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit. So go to Indochino.com and use the promo code BlueWire.
If you've listened to the Beeble Index podcast for more than a week, you might have heard us mention Danny Green's name quite a few times for someone who is very good at basketball, despite being in a smaller, well-optimized role. And he was once again on display in the Lakers' loss last night with just how good he is, with some crazy hot three-point shooting and even dribbled a little bit. You'd like a behind-the-back dribble. But Tim, as our resident Laker and, I guess, part-time Celtics fan.
That's not.
You have a burner account. What are your thoughts on the Clippers deciding that LA is now Clippertown?
It's not Clippertown, and as somebody who lives in LA, you should know that.
Yeah, I was
there's like a deeply ingrained, I don't want to say Laker culture, but like it would take years and years for them to shift the tide.
Yeah, I was out last night when the game was going on, and I mean, I live in Long Beach. It's like the outskirts of LA County, and there's just, it's all Lakers jerseys everywhere. It's wild.
Yeah. But to answer your question, it was not pleasant. The Lakers are missing some players, but I mean, we can't complain about not having Kyle Kuzma if the Clippers didn't have Paul George. So in that sense,
it was. What about Rondo? You didn't have Rondo.
We were better off without Rondo. And this can be like a 30-minute podcast of me complaining about things, but schematically, we saw yet again how important X's and O's can be, and how relying on a couple playmakers can put you in a tough position. Anthony Davis and LeBron James weren't at their peak game last night, and it really, really hurt the team. Had a couple guys that had good performances, but another thing we recently tweeted out and have been looking at is, as a roster, understanding how dependent players are upon other players or set plays to create their opportunity, more so than being a self-creator. So LeBron James, self-creator, Lou Williams, self-creator, they're gonna make their own shots. A lot of the guys on the Laker roster, Danny Green, guys like KCP, even Anthony Davis, they, in more situations than not, are being set up and then finishing more so than making something happen. If we looked at the Lakers rotation and just their top eight guys based off their data last year, and then compared them to, 10,000 other eight-man rotations, mm-hmm. they had more dependency. Those individual players had more dependency than 88% of that 10,000 different groups of players.
So essentially, that means that the Lakers
12th percentile of self-creation.
Yeah,
they don't have self-creation. There's no
heavily
place.
Very heavily, they're reliant on the creators on that team to create shots, and there's not a ton of kind of the secondary creators or guys who can do more small creation roles, as opposed to, I guess, like the tip of the spear versus the actual spear itself.
I'm trying to think back to my track days. Okay. I think I get your analogy.
You made a track analogy?
Is that the Lakers are very dependent on the few playmakers they do have, and then also very more reliant on set plays than many other teams would be, just because of the nature of the skill sets and tendencies their players have. And when the set play piece isn't there, they're not in a position to succeed.
Yeah. Is that not what I said? Did I really mess that one up?
More or less.
It sounded way better in my head.
Talk to you after class.
So I guess my question about the Lakers is, which guy do you think they could, and their bench got outscored, 60 to 19 last night and looked hopeless. They're throwing Dwight Howard out there for 19 minutes a game. He grabbed a few rebounds, but he looked really uncomfortable to me. He did? Oh, sorry.
No. He played fine. Here's okay. He played well. Dudley, caught him.
Solid.
He made a couple threes. Troy Daniels made threes, but he's not good defensively. But McGee did his thing. But, KCP was not good. They didn't really have any point guards in the game. Quinn Cook was not very good. They couldn't execute entry passes to the post. So that was a struggle. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Keep going.
No, I was just going to ask. So, my question, you're kind of answering my question is, do you think there's any unutilized or underutilized skill on that bench that can add some unexpected depth to the Lakers?
Dwight Howard post-ups.
No. Hey, Dwight Howard actually, on several occasions, did not force up the post shot, which I was so happy with, because mm-hmm. that's so different from how he's played for years. Well, Eric, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter or any of the listeners follow me on Twitter.
What's your handle?
There's this guy from Texas A&M named Alex Caruso, and I think with the Lakers style of play that they played last night, not a lot of pick and roll. Really what they wanted from their point guards was be able to make an entry pass, make an open three, play defense. Pretty much it. You don't need to be a great playmaker, great creator, anything like that. Alex Caruso can do those things. He's overall not a very good player. And I think he's kind of like Danny Green in that he has a couple skills he's good at. He just hasn't been in that perfect role for those skills, so we're not seeing the impact from him. So he could very well not pan out, but he's been somebody that has been good at several things, and if they can put him into that point guard role, and it seems as though what they want from that role matches his skill set pretty perfectly, he'd be a very good fit to defend because he does that well. He can knock down some open threes. He's not a great three-point shooter. Quinn Cook is a better three-point shooter. KCP is a better three-point shooter. Troy Daniels. But he can defend. He can hit threes. And he can make some of the simpler point guard passes that some of those other players just can't really do. So that's my hope.
Yeah, sounds like you just described the Bulls era Ron Harper in the back end of his career when he played that exact role for the championship teams.
Yeah, do your job. You don't need to run a bunch of pick and rolls. You've got LeBron James out there. You don't need to – I mean, the ball should be in Anthony Davis and LeBron James' hands, and you just need to be able to space the floor and play defense.
Make smart secondary reads.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because there's a difference between what Caruso can do, which is make those secondary reads, and what some of the other players who are at the very end of that dependency spectrum can't do. And you just have to be good enough. I think he's like a B playmaker against versus other guards, and that's all they really need.
Absolutely. I think it'll be an interesting thing to track if the Lakers offense looks better going forwards, and
we'll see.
We'll have to see. I mean, LeBron didn't look great, so we'll have to see if that was just a bad game or if he is actually starting to slow down for finally. It'll be a very exciting year, but I think that's all we have for today. Eric, tell the people where to find you.
I am on Twitter at @EricG_NBA, ERICG_NBA, and I write for you guys at B-Ball Index and over at Blazers Edge, so you can find me at any of those places.
You working on anything outside of the rookie extension article that'll be going up shortly?
I think the next thing I'm going to do is an extension to the rookie extension article and look at how when the maximum contracts were signed on previous rookie extension players, what their projections were, and if there's any pattern on who does and does not meet those projections for the maximum contracts. I think would be kind of interesting and informative as we talk about guys like Jaylen Brown to see if someone like Jaylen Brown, if we should be optimistic or not.
That sounds great. What about you, Tim? You got anything going on besides crying over the Lakers?
I'm very busy. I don't have any.
It might be a full-time job.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have any written content on its way. The thing is I'll start writing a piece and then I end up just handing it off to other people and letting like Alex finish it or one of these guys finish it and be like, hey, you know that idea I said you could write about? Here's two paragraphs. Use this. So you may see some Tim here or there, not under my name, but yeah, I don't know. Keep an eye out for tweets, new data, new graphics. One thing that we want to try to do this year is demo some of the capabilities that we're working with college teams on and try to do that in a public space. And instead of just doing it for like Duke or North Carolina or somebody, let's do it for the Lakers. We've got the data. We can show the people, we can show the listeners the same info that we're giving to coaching staffs and athletic directors. So they can see, they can be put in that seat and say, all right, how are we going to, I don't know, make the Lakers a better basketball team? Or how are they performing? What could they be doing better? So it may take a little bit of time to build all of that out, but I'm excited about that. And I mean, it's my favorite team. So that'll be particularly, potentially agonizing for me to get in depth and see exactly how bad it might be and have the answers for what they could be doing better. But yeah, that'll be something to keep an eye out for. So lots of good stuff ahead. Always have good people working on cool things.
That sounds very exciting. And definitely everyone listening, keep an eye on the B-Ball Index Twitter account, as well as Tim's personal Twitter account for all that fun Laker bashing statistical stuff we'll have coming for you. And, you know, maybe there'll be a few nice things, but That's just about Alex Caruso.
Mostly bashing and crying. Yeah. Gnashing of teeth.
Nothing better. Thank you all for joining us today. We hope you've been enjoying the first couple days of the NBA season, and we will see you next week.